handouts, and that's okay. So if you have a handout, maybe we can give one to everyone right there.
And maybe pull your switch. Welcome, everybody.
It is so beautiful to see so many new faces here. As you see, we've expanded our table. As I have been saying in other classes, I love to begin with a chance, even though it takes a few minutes, to get everyone's voice into this space, especially when we're doing creative work, which I know can sometimes be vulnerable and a little nerve-wracking. So what I'd like you to do is say your name and your pronouns and one thing you're proud of in the past few days. It can be really small. It can be like, I finished the writing exercise. It can be, I did this hike. Just something that you are really honoring yourself for. And whoever wants to start can begin.
I'm Tom, he, him, and I'm proud to have brought my sister Lori to Heart Lake yesterday.
I'm Steve, he, him. I have been spending a lot of time sitting quietly.
I am Ashton, I use she, her pronouns, and I am proud that I kind of vaguely made a vase on the pottery wheel yesterday.
Wow.
Vaguely.
I'm Midge, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm proud that I grabbed some bear bones and went for a walk in the woods yesterday all by myself.
Oh, yeah. Brave. So brave.
I'm Judy, she, her. Went for a hike to Monkey Bear yesterday, but then this morning I took my Camelback water pack apart all by myself and cleaned it out.
All right.
I did.
My husband did not do it for me.
I'm Frank, I am a he, him, ho-hum. And I actually remember to do my stretching exercises before breakfast this morning.
I'm Mark, he, him, and I'm proud that I finished the novel that I was reading. It was a girl with a louding voice, and I would recommend it to anybody.
Okay.
I'm David, he, him, and I'm proud that I've tried some new things.
Beautiful.
I'm Brenda, she, they, and in a related vein, I'm proud that I came to this class.
Yes. We're so glad to have you.
I'm Lori, she, her, and I'm proud of so many things that I've done so far. I'll just say, trying for the first time throwing pottery.
Yeah.
Chris, I use he, him pronouns, and proud that I was brave enough to go to the ukulele group yesterday with my daughter, and we actually learned to play the ukulele.
That sounded great. I was
reading in the library.
That was awesome. Well, probably was the time.
It was set list, too, like all over the place.
And it was hi, my name is Elvin, and he, him. And I'm proud that I got to stop comparing myself to others, and when coming up with ideas on being creative, like being disconnected helps.
Yay! Nice. Awesome. I'm Brittany. I'm she/her pronouns, and I'm proud of. I'm proud of other people. Can I say that?
Yeah.
I'm proud of people attempting to do songs that are uncomfortable to them. I feel really proud of people.
Will you say one thing you're proud of for yourself too?
I'm proud that I was willing to name a step to take to encounter a fear. Because I've done that inside but not outside to people.
I'm Bernie, and I feel great after a very challenging hike to Heart Lake yesterday. Thanks to Lisa and her husband Brad, it ended up being very fruitful.
My name's Jeremy. I use he, him pronouns, and I am happy that I've walked the labyrinth every day since I've been here. About 15, 20 minutes, so if anybody wants to do it.
Where is it? It's still down.
It's actually, no, I think they'll change that one. It's actually past the basketball court.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So,
they do.
I don't know where I am right now.
Do the B one.
Oh, back to school.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm Madeline, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm proud that I found the balance between doing nothing and doing lots of things.
I'm Brenda, she, her pronouns, and I'm glad that I'm taking complete space for myself in the evening.
I'm David, I use he, him pronouns, and I would say I'm proud of my friendship with Jeremy.
I'm Carol, she, her pronouns, and I'm proud that I actually sat for a morning and undistractedly was able to read a book.
I'm Emma Kate, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm proud of not giving up on the way up to Copper Basin yesterday and leaving the hike.
My name is Wendell, you can call me by he, him, and I'm proud of getting up on my first alarm today because I've been trying to give myself more physical energy.
I'm Lisa, and I use she, her, and I'm proud to be searching for my creative energy.
I'm Bill, he and him, and I'm totally delighted, I'll just say as a barren introvert, that I've been talking to people.
I am Luna, she, her, and I guess I'm proud that I'm letting myself have all the rest I need.
Yay. I'm Jeannie Olsen, and when you're Norwegian, you don't use the word proud. You use the word grateful, and I can list lots of things I'm grateful for. It doesn't make me say I'm proud of something that I'm at this class.
I'm Harold, and I'm proud that I'm married to Mona.
We can all go.
My name is Christina. I have allergies. pronouns are she, her, and I'm proud that when I was feeling weary, I could pause long enough to say, can you help me do this thing? Because I'm tired.
I'll go last.
I'm Jeff. I use he, him pronouns, and I find I'm proud of following through and asking questions that are hard.
I'm Forrest. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm proud that I gave the class a first chance and a second chance because I don't normally think of poetry as something enjoyable at all.
Beautiful.
Tell it.
I'm Melinda. I use she, her pronouns, and I am proud that I'm volunteering these weeks and that I took time to come. I had to rearrange my schedule a little bit. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And then I also got permission to take a class in the afternoon, so I feel like I'm doing those amendments.
I'm Raisa, I use she, hers, and I am so proud to hold this space for all of you and honored to hold this space for you. And it's my first time at Holden, so
a lot
of adjusting, and I'm so grateful to be able to have so many wonderful conversations with all of you. I want to make sure everybody has a handout to look at because visuals are super important. So if you don't have one, we don't have enough for everyone. Find someone that you can kind of aim here and
we can share it.
Yeah, sure.
You got it.
Yeah, I'll share it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. So, yeah.
I have hearing aids on and they're not good enough.
Okay, great. I will try.
Well, I appreciate anybody speaks as loudly as they are comfortable.
Thank you so much for advocating for that. I will talk as loud as I can and just raise your hand if you need me to repeat, okay? Just give me a little wave. I haven't been mic'd because we've been in a closed circle and now I wish I was kind of mic'd. We're going to do a quick review. So one of the joys is that this isn't sequential, so we get people coming and going. And then I also get to lean on all of you that have been to multiple sessions. So if you've been to a session before, will you name one thing you've been holding on to and have learned about the Tree of Life to begin? One thing that you've been thinking about or that you held on to. Yes, Mitch.
I was surprised by how the center of the Tree of Life follows the chakras, which is a completely different spiritual realm.
Beautiful. So one thing to know about the Tree of Life, which is, I could only fit part of it on the board, is that the first thing, for all of you who are new, is that it basically follows the divine pathway for creation in Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism. And one of the things in Jewish mysticism is that we are kind of co-creating with the divine, right? So instead of a transcendent model where God is above you, God is in everything. And does anyone want to retell this, that Simsum contraction story? Because I've said it twice. Does anyone want to recap? Otherwise, I'll tell it again. It's a beautiful myth. Yeah, Mark, please.
And at the beginning of creation, the creation contracted into one. I can't even call it mass, but into one. And then as the creation happened, God sent his light through channels out into the universe. And those channels shattered, and all those sparks of light went flying into people and into the universe.
Absolutely. Beautiful. So yeah, so in, we call it Simsum. It's a great contraction. Because one of the questions is, well, if God is everywhere, right? If God is in everything in Jewish mysticism, then how can there be people? How can we have separation, right? If there is this oneness, then how can we have other beings? So there was a great contraction, a great primal void, a pulling in called Simsum. And in this void space, God channeled his energy into vessels, right? These vessels, however you want to picture them. And the light was so strong that the vessel shattered. And a piece of that light landed in everyone and everything. And the concept of tikkun olam in Judaism is this repair of the world, that we are searching for that light in each thing, event, person, experience, and that we are co-creating with God to sort of work on that repair. So that's kind of the basic Kabbalah sort of model. And as I've said before, the Tree of Life is basically three different levels. This is like the easiest way, and we could fall down a rabbit hole. So part of me is like just accepting we're only going to scratch the surface of this. But we basically have three different levels. So the first level, which we worked on earlier in the week, is the first triad, the primal process. So it's this idea we begin, we go from the highest emanation, right? So when the light sort of poured through this, the highest emanation kept there, moving to chokmah, wisdom. So we have mind beyond mind, the nothingness, the pure potential, stillness. So that moment in writing or whatever kind of creativity that your creative practice you're doing, you're like, I'm in a complete blank. There's just blankness. This kind of model shows that that actually is the Ein Sof, the potential, the nothingness. The Ein Sof is kind of this manifestation of God that is everywhere and can't be put into form. Moving from there, we move to Chokmah, wisdom associated with the right brain. So this idea of oneness. Every kind of sefirot or emanation corresponds to the part of the body. Right brain, the spark, the primal point, the deep well, that moment when you get an insight and you're like, this could be a poem, right? So we worked with this idea of initial ideas and sparks. And then we moved to Bina, understanding our structure, which is what we worked on. Was it yesterday? It was yesterday. Can't believe it's like time moves. And that's left brain. So that's how do we move from this spark to actually like manifesting this in a poem, a story. It could be architecture, building something, right? And on the body, the third eye point is actually located between these two points.
So this is just so that we were working within the primal triad. Now we're moving further down to the second triad, which is seeking inner balance. So we're moving closer to like an earthly emanation. When we get to the third triad, we'll be working with the foundation. And so I want to pause there because I know it's a lot of information, especially if you're just coming into the class. Are there any quick questions or like noticings that anyone wants to speak before we move? Yeah.
Yesterday, or maybe a couple times, I picked up that you talked about that there's some emotion within this little thing.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm just curious about that.
Yes. So, this is a wonderful question and a complex answer, which is that we have this kind of artificial order. Just one of the hardest things about Kabbalah to teach is that one of the things we're warned against is like not to make it information, right? Like it can't just be this information delivered. So, but in order to teach, we kind of have to put it in an order, right? So as I teach this, it's like 1, 2, 3, right? Now we're moving to the second triad, 4, 5, 6. But also, everything connects to everything else. So if you look at your piece of paper or you're sharing at it, there's pathways between every single point and triad. So everything connects to each other. And each pathway is connected to a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So that's why, and especially in Kabbalah, it's this idea that through language we're creating. Through language and the word, there's a sense of creation and world building, which is why it's amazing for our poetry writing, right? Because it's very rooted in this practice that writing and letters are part of that creation. So the simple answer is that there's movement between all of them, that though we kind of, to teach and to sort of understand each manifestation, we put them in order, they really kind of go in this sort of circular. Keter, crown, means circle. There's a way that from the beginning we end up, there's a sort of circular motion. That this isn't, we're tempted to see this as like the highest emanation, as like a hierarchy, but this isn't a hierarchy, right? The foundation is just as important as the highest point. Does that make sense? Okay. I'm like, we could just keep falling into this. So, today we're going to be looking at, in our poetry, we have this balance. I don't know if any of you feel this way. Most of us fall on one side of this. So we have this idea of hased, the right shoulder. This, in Kabbalah, this is compassion, openness, sort of flow. People who are like, I start writing and I can't stop. I don't know where to end, right? We have this sort of bountiful flowing. Gevura, on the other side, is boundaries, which I'm really interested in, and we'll be talking about this today. Strength, restraint. And this is the left shoulder, associated with the left shoulder of the body. And right in the middle, and this is the first time I heard this, it gave me chills, we have the heart space. We have beauty and the heart space. So there's this idea that in order to actually be located and centered in our heart, we have to find some kind of balance between boundaries and giving. Right? So Abraham and Isaac are often associated with this. Isaac is associated with Gevurah, boundaries, being bound. Abraham with this idea of giving in the Jewish story. Abraham of giving so much that there's pain. Does that make sense? Does that land?
Yes, it does.
So most of us, and this is sort of like a self-inquiry, find ourselves in our creative practice falling into one or the other. We find ourselves too rigid, too hard on ourselves, right? Part of the reason I have us go around and say something we're proud or grateful of is that often I think we like constrict and have boundary before we get to that place of opening. And I hope today we can talk about the ways boundaries and restraint in our creative work can actually lead way to more opening. It creates a little like container or vessel. Or we find ourselves in the part of hased, compassion, openness, where we start writing and we're like, oh, it just keeps going. There's no structure. I don't know how to form it into something. It's sort of boundless. If I fall on this side too, we also find ourselves over-giving. We find ourselves giving to the point of depletion. It's all connected, right? We can't talk about one of these in our creative work without also thinking about ourselves just as being. I'm going to come sit down for a second. So we're thinking about this super, super delicate balance.
And so our questions today are, how can boundaries impact our creative worlds both on and off the page, right? Because it's all blended and connected. How can saying no and setting limits and seeking focus change our poetry? Can certain kinds of limitations or constraints actually improve our writing? Those are like, I can't promise we're going to answer them today, but that's kind of what we'll be exploring, right?
Could you just repeat that?
Yes.
Isn't it
too? It's right there. So before we go into it, I'm just curious, does that bring up anything for anyone, anything anybody wants to speak into the room? Like, how can constraints, has there been other aspects of your life where having a limit or boundary in a creative space actually helped you? I'd love to hear some examples if that, yeah, Mark.
I'm a master procrastinator, and so having a deadline makes me do it.
Great.
So I wrote a lot of Saturday night sermons.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. That's a perfect example.
Sunday morning.
Amazing.
Late Sunday morning.
What were you gonna? Were you gonna say something? Remind me of your name.
I'm David.
David, okay.
And I've done a fair bit of writing in the nonfiction type, and when we submit articles and things, there's always a word limit.
Great.
And I always write twice as much of that.
Beautiful.
And then having that limit is just being much more clear and
awesome. Great. Yeah, Brenda.
Structure and technique is kind of a boundary, which kind of counteracts that openness.
Beautiful.
And I tend to go with the openness, and so that structure and format and boundary is a nice addition.
Great.
To it.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of to Brenda's point, I tend to kind of just like put all my words out there. And I'm a grad student right now, so everything is, you know, everything's structured, everything's page limit, word limit, so I put everything out there and it's like 3,000 words over. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a nice challenge to have to cut down and think about what's most important in my scientific writing that needs to stay and what can be cut out. It's a nice like intellectual challenge.
Beautiful.
I can think of something in baking.
Yes, great.
In baking, you know, like in regular recipes, you can just be like, I want to add this, and I want to add this, and I want to add this, and see what I come up with. But with baking, it's almost kind of this more like a scientific, you know, thing where you have to have these balanced ingredients, and certain things have to be in, and you can't put too much in, or else it won't turn out.
So, and when you put it in, too.
Exactly.
Yeah,
when I've led workshops and said, like, okay, in 7 words or less, what's your purpose? Mm-hmm. And you have 1 minute to come up with it, people first get anxious, and then what they come up with is brilliant. Yeah. And I think some of it is because I'm saying 7 words and because I'm saying 1 minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think it's so entrenched that we think constraints, or maybe I'll speak for myself, I think often that constraints are bad.
Yeah.
When really, I've also had the experience that they're really helpful.
Yes. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a way in which, and I think when we look at this, when we look how linked they are, right, in this tree of life, in this creation, right, where we move from, right, from structure. So we go from this, you know, I'm going to say it like it's a binary. It's clearly not a binary, that they're all connected. From openness, right brain, oneness, left brain, structure, understanding, then back to openness again, then back to boundaries, and then we arrive again at the center place. So these need each other, right? We can't, there's a way that by when we choose some kind of constraint around our writing, we're automatically connecting to a sort of openness. It's like a funnel. We have like a place to channel or funnel all of the ideas. I think a blank page is really scary. I don't know if anyone else has felt that before, but sometimes you're like, that's terrifying. I need to be working with something in order to access this heart space, this beauty. Should we do a little practice with restraint? So let's see, what do we want to do? Okay. I would like some people to tell me a word you love. It can be any word that you love or a word you
plethora.
Think. Plethora. Plethora? Okay, I'm not a great speller. I think I have it.
Yes!
Sanguine.
Okay, sanguine. Can you define sanguine for everyone, Jeff?
Oh, a feeling of sort of okayness.
Okayness.
Letting things flow over you.
Great.
Or awesome. Bloody.
Resplendent.
Oh, you all have really fancy words. All right.
Belly button. For favorite.
You need a container, right?
Two socks.
Yeah. Two socks.
It's a question.
I don't know.
Love.
What else? Sequester. Sequester. Oh, that's a good one.
Earthy.
Love.
Earthy.
You're going to get it in.
Paper.
Paper.
Content.
Content.
Ooh, I love paper.
Can I get a verb in there?
Boop.
What?
Is boop a verb?
Boop, sure.
Boop.
Boop.
Abide.
Abide.
Dude.
Run.
Run. Okay, maybe one more, one or two more.
Scramble.
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 Okay.
Consider doing
this. Okay. All right, so we have plethora, sanguine, resplendent, belly button, tube socks, onomatopoeia, sequester, earthy, boop, content, scramble, paper, run, abide, love, moon, and consider. And for the next 6 minutes, I want you to write and try to include as many words of these as you can.
Without looking at them?
Oh no, you can look at them. This is not a memory game. You can, yes, Mitch. Onomatopoeia, like it's a word that sounds like what it sounds like. So I whisper. I want to give a few more constraints while we're in this. So David asked a great question. Yes, the goal is to write a poem, but that can be overwhelming. The point of this is we're having fun, right? So if writing a story or just writing a scramble, writing something that doesn't necessarily make sense, those of us who read those other poems the other day, this sort of like surreal world building, I just want you to see where it takes you, okay? There's no like grand objective. Just see what these words can bring up for you, okay?
What does boop mean?
I don't know, what is boop?
Boop, the dog's nose. Boop, when the dog wants to stay.
There's another meaning of boop. I think well, it's a devastating disease.
Here you go,
Bernie.
Is it?
Which, yes, it's your relative had nearly killed her. But it's called boop.
You might not use that word.
Yeah, you do not have to use that. All right, I'm starting our timer.
How long?
6 minutes.
For those of us who can't see the board,
yes, I'll read them again. Plethora, sanguine, resplendent, belly button, tube socks, onomatopoeia, sequester, earthy, boop, content, scramble, paper, run, abide, love, moon, and consider.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So silly.
Okay. Oh, I hope that you feel that way. Okay. Who feels comfortable sharing? Yes, Forrest. Oh, I'm so excited to hear these.
Oh,
shoot. Oh,
yes.
Nice.
Okay.
The resplendent moon shines an earthy plethora of light on my sanguine tube socks.
Okay.
As I gaze at my belly button and consider the blank paper before me, my thoughts first run fearful, and then, slowly, a stillness abides. I am sequestered with love and content. Boop! Onomatopoeia.
Oh, that was amazing!
with a plethora of tube suckers. This was splendid for my earthy scrambled belly button to consider the moon with abiding love after contentedly finding my tube socks. The sanguine onomatopoeia of contented love would run on my paper and I would find myself looped to a different space.
Amazing. Yeah, it's David.
When will I learn to abide? To love the moon in its oft sanguine run, the plethora of beauty sequestered outside of my vision. Staring at my belly button, I sense scrambled thoughts. Considering my tube socks, I remember the blank sheet of paper in third grade. The sound of boop, boop, boop. The onomatopoeic sound of boop, boop, boop. As the class wrote frantically, and I was lost in my imagination of the resplendent forest with its earthy floor where my grandfather taught me to abide.
The universe abides in your belly button. So that when I find my thoughts, they are sequestered by the plethora of stars and dreams I have found there. There is no other choice than to pull up my tube socks and run. I run over the earthy hills. I run into the
resplendent.
I run into the resplendent sun that sparkles in your eyes. I run across the paper moon and fall into a blanket of love. Where my being is scrambled and rewritten, sanguine, we are made new.
Moon, the belly button of resplendent plethora, runs, abides. Love considers the earthy scramble, sanguine. Paper sequesters onomatopoeia, boop. Tube socks. Content.
Anybody else? Yes.
I sit with my partner under the light of the moon. The earlier rains lend the atmosphere the earthy smell of dewy grass and wet pavement. The plethora of stars glitter in the sky, reminding me that their light is millions of years old. I consider the weight of what surrounds me. I am gazing into the past. I see what was formed in the time of distant ancestors. I boop my partner's nose. He rests his hand on my midriff, brushing my belly button with his fingers, acknowledging the pain I feel sequestered inside of me. He has taken me to the moon and stars to distract me. He has taken me to my happy place, placed his hand on me, a small act full of love. I feel content. Oh.
I'll do one or two more if anyone else.
Yeah.
Brittany.
Okay. The tube socks were hanging on the railing, resplendent with an earthy fragrance. Reminiscent of a belly button on a sunny day. Moonstruck eyes and paper-thin skin sat sequestered near her love. Come abide with me, she said. So, with a plethora of energy, her love ran to her side. I will run to you for all our days, my pretty boop.
Okay, one more, yes.
I run into a plethora of earthly, resplendent belly buttons. A sanguine moon scrambles them before my eyes like wrinkling paper and sequesters me in its mute whispers. It calls me to boop them and why that we all have them, but consider each unique.
Amazing. Wow.
Okay, Chris, we'll do one more and then we'll okay. do one for next one.
A plethora of sanguine moons scrambled across my paper, resplendent as earthy tube socks sequestered in an embrace of love. Mm-hmm. One moon was not content to run, and instead sat down to the soft sound of to consider the meaning of onomatopoeia. She could not abide not knowing. She stared at her belly button until everything became clear.
Oh, my God. I am so inspired. So I hope this, just by the amount of laughter in the room, we so often think of rules as like, like they hurt us, right? Like when I think of rules, it's both, sometimes it gives us safety, but sometimes in our creative work, we sort of like strain against it, right? Or we resist them, or we think about, you know, all, like any, even the idea of routine, the minute like we put a routine in, we're like, oh, actually, I'm not gonna do that. There's like this rebellion that comes out. And so I hope that just by the amount of laughter and the amount of like different things that came out of that, so much creativity, right? Like just by giving yourself a list of words, so many things came up that were beautiful and strange and lovely. So I think we should think about rules a little bit more, because I'm really curious, every time people come into a room, and I've already heard this a little bit in conversations we've had, what are the rules of poetry? Like when I say, okay, to be a poet or for there to be a poem, what were like some of the, like there's always rules that we hold whether or not we like make them conscious, right? Like they have to rhyme, yeah. is one of my students say a lot. What are the other rules when you think of poetry or like creative work? Yeah, Mark.
It advances an idea.
It advances an idea. Okay, I can already tell we're not gonna have enough space, but we'll do our best. Okay, it advances an idea. What else? What are, and they can be like rules that cause you pain, rules that cause you joy. Yeah, Brittany.
Well, like a sense of rhythm.
Sense of rhythm. Great.
I don't know if there's a is a rule, but I always think of poetry as there's imagery.
Imagery, okay.
That it can only be words.
Can only be words. Beautiful. Yeah, it poetry can only be words is a great one. We'll talk about that.
It has to sound.
It has to sound. And when you say sound, you
it,
mean...
It has to have, to be spoken, sound, yeah. Sort of...
It has to have sound.
There's a denseness or a sifting out of the many into
distilled.
Concise.
Distillation.
Should be musical.
Distillation.
Musical. And what about like to be a poet? What are the rules for us to be able
to be?
Be
cool like you.
I think you have to be open.
Open? Okay, that's a rule, yes. These are so much gentler than I expected. People are always like, and my third grade teacher told me that 1% of people make it. Okay, what else?
It's a flow.
A flow. Okay. What else?
You have to keep a pencil and paper by your bed.
Okay, pencil and paper by bed.
A lot of famous poets are kind of tortured.
Yes. Oh, this is one of my favorite ones to talk about. The tortured artist. The tortured poet.
They need to go to David's classes,
yes.
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christina.
There are different kinds of poems.
Yes.
Like,
right.
Like the haiku, the limerick.
Different kinds of form.
I think poets wear scarves.
Okay, great. You have to wear a scarf. Scarf.
And probably be a drunk.
A drunk. Okay, great.
There's an outpouring or an overwhelming emotion or feeling component.
So what's it?
Emotions. Feeling. What else? I know we're carrying more rules about like, because, and what I'm getting at is like, the things we're holding that also the rules that make it so we won't claim our own ability to just put our pen to paper, right? Or to say like, I'm not a poet, I'm not a writer, right? What are the other rules? Do you have to do it every day? Like, what else? What to claim being a poet or a writer?
Observant.
Great.
Published.
Great. That's a
Or insightful.
Yeah. Insightful?
Uh-huh.
Insightful.
Creative.
Introverted.
These are so great. What else? I know there's more. I like
Contemplative.
Contemplative. Okay.
I like thinking of opposites too, so like what's not a poet?
Okay, great. We'll do a little we're running with this. What is not a poet?
Scientific.
Scientific.
Over analytic.
Literal.
Depends on the poem.
What else? And also, we're just be clear, we're going to like scramble these all up. So just, I'd really like to know what you're carrying.
Sequential.
Okay, chronological maybe?
Chronological, yeah.
So like orderly.
Uncool.
Boring.
Boring.
Scarfless.
So maybe we'll say with poetry, there's some amount of letting in chaos. Would we say that's too? Some amount of chaos.
Yeah. And then maybe poets have to have big vocabulary.
Oh yeah. Okay, so we have just and also to the things that like allow us to claim being poets is like a big vocabulary. We're published. We do it every day. What else? Yes, buddy.
You have to have many for one to be valuable. Like
many
to be able to pick one out of a larger.
Okay, so you have to have a wide body of work to be a poet. Great.
A repertoire.
To be French.
Okay, any other things?
You have to be French.
You have to be French. Okay.
French-ish.
French-ish to be a poet. Any other rules? Any other rules we're going to scramble up?
You have to be poor.
Poor, great. Oh, yeah. Broke. The Baroque totally poet. The
yeah,
poet.
Yeah.
Suicidal.
Fussy.
There you go.
Okay. Last things like your fourth grade teacher told you about writing your poetry that made you be like, I'm never going to write again, right? Those can go up there too, right? The rules that kind of shut down that part of you when you were little that could just write stories.
Can't be silly.
Great.
So no silly
writing.
No
silly.
Grammatically perfect.
Great.
Complex.
Okay, so it can't be simple. We're running out of space.
Have to have a way with words.
The rules are either way too hard or there's no rules.
Okay, so like.
Nocturnal.
Has to rhyme. Okay. So.
You have to be able to sit still.
I'm gonna do something really crazy and erase all of these. Actually, I'm gonna read some of them. No silliness, fussy, advances idea, grammatically perfect, sense of rhythm, musical, open, some sense of care, perfect, flow, can only be words, has to have sound, broke, tortured poet, emotion, feeling, observant, scarf, Frenchish, published, drunk, right? And then, not a poet, is scientific. Also, I just want to say one of my favorite poets is a biologist. Literal, sequential, chronological, boring, in control. So we have all of these rules, actually, that we're carrying. Which maybe we don't always articulate, but actually we're, without being conscious of it all the time, all of these are informing this balance, right? And you all, I mean, each of you probably said a few of these, but we're each carrying our own set of rules that's either allowing us to claim or not claim this ability that writing is for us. I was just talking to someone about thinking about writing more like meditation some days, right? We show up to the process of it. And some days it's really hard and we can't do it. And we just write, I don't know, over and over and over again on our piece of paper. And some days we have this enlightened poetic journaling experience where we write and we feel like we're on the moon and it's resplendent, right? And like something I really want to, I hope that you leave, so even this class or however many sessions you've been on around rules, is that like if we can show up just to the process, thinking of it like meditation, like a practice, so that we can be in further in touch with ourselves, I think something loosens around this, right? So I just want you to think about like the kinds of rules that you're carrying about what is a poet and what a writer is. I'm going to erase these. I'm erasing them because I want you to think about all the ways you can let some of those go. How can you let go of the rules that are not serving you? That's just stopping you from showing up for 5 minutes or 10 minutes every day to put your pen to paper, right? So often we're just like,
we're like, well, we're not a poet. I see so many times people write beautiful poems and they're like, I'm not a poet. And I always want to be like, yes, you are. You are a poet. You're writing every day, right? So we're going to do something with our own writing, re-embracing your rules. This is really fun. I'm thinking about Dr. Seuss and Green Eggs and Ham, and the way that Green Eggs and Ham was written was that he had a bet with his publisher, who said, I bet you can't write a book from 25 words. And Dr. Seuss said, I bet that I can write a book from 25 words. So, right now on your pieces of paper, I want you to give yourself three rules for a poem. So like how many lines? Come up with three. I'll give you some like possibilities, right? It could be only using 20 words, right? It could be about, let's say you have to include three colors. It could have to be about Holden and include mint chocolate chip ice cream. They're gonna be completely arbitrary, right? So three, just come up with three rules for yourself. So let's say, I'll give you some options. They could be, it would have to be 10 lines and include three colors. I'll give you like some options in case this is help. I want you to come up with three rules. Let's say it has to rhyme. That's one we can always include as a rule. What are some other rules we might put in the bank of possible constraints? Can't use the letter E. There's a whole book, a whole 50,000 word book without the letter E. This often, I encourage you to try this. No letter E comes up with some amazing poems.
Four nouns and 10 adjectives.
Great. Four nouns, 10 adjectives. That's awesome, Brenda.
No commas.
Okay, awesome. No commas.
All 10 ing words.
Great. 10 gerundas, 10 ing words.
All questions.
Great. I love that, David. All questions. My handwriting is so messy. I'm so sorry. Okay, all questions.
No vowels.
No vowels. Oh, that's no. Okay. Anything else we can put in the collective bank?
Because we have to write in Hebrew, right?
Yeah, I would not be able to call that rule. Anything else?
The end of every sentence should be with the letter A.
Okay, ending in A. Okay, so we have some ideas in case you're stuck, but most of us might have their own rules they want to add. So have three rules for yourself. They can be really silly, as we've shown.
There's three rules, right? You speak of three rules.
Three rules. Three rules. I encourage the no letter E to see if anyone has.
Okay, get to a good stopping place.
Does anyone want to share a few lines or all of your work?
I'll share.
Awesome.
We share the rules.
You can share your rules, yep.
So my rules were it had to have words ending in ing, no letter E, and four nouns.
Great. No letter E.
Winding through paths, jumping across logs, moss flowing down rocks, sunlight burning onto rosy skin, dust coating shins, a comforting find.
No yeast! Yeah, Mid.
Mine had to start with one word and then two, like a pyramid. Have three colors and three animals.
Three animals.
And so I have. Consider the horse or a pig, but not a cow. What color could it be? Chestnut, sorrel, bay, pinto, or gray? Could it fly past the moon today?
Nice. David, yeah.
I did a similar one of Midge, one of your rules of each line is one word longer.
Yeah.
And all questions except the last line. And then every other line alternates warm and cool colors.
Green. Wow.
Purple. Why yellow? Who picks green? When berries turn red, how will blue sky feel? Which song cuts your heart orange? Will violet fabric swirl in the night? I taste the coming together that is rainbow.
Brenda?
I have, my rules were 6 lines, all questions, and that it rhymes. Why does it just work here? Is it the people, the land, the food? Will the answer ever be clear? Can I ever truly know this brood? Will I ever come back again? Or have I just been?
I only had 2 rules, adjective in every line and about nature.
Great.
The tall green trees shimmer in the rising sun. My centering heart responds with a great sense of peace. I look to the expansive morning sky and feel the inspiring hope of this new day. I sense within my beautiful being the life-giving energy of the awakening trees.
If I tried to write a sonnet, but you didn't give me enough.
It's a constraint.
Time constraint. I've got 8 lines and a 2 line. And I settled my back against the tree. Oh, my rules were it had to rhyme, it had to be about a leaf, and about a relationship to the tree. I settled my back against the tree, hoping to find some rest. A leaf, unfettered, hopped on me, floating as if in a chest. It laughed its way upon my head, lightly touching my ear. It remained there instead of following the wind to the air. And there should be another here. The leaf reminded me of tree song contained within the table.
That feels like a beautiful one to end on. So I hope that you come away. I think we carry lots of rules, but that they actually open a lot up for us, right? They can be really silly, and they're not something to be afraid of. They can open up the sense of boundlessness for our creativity. They remind us what it's like to laugh a lot in our writing. It's such a gift to hear all your words. And tomorrow we'll be working with surrender. We'll be working with the third triad. So this is about a more of the closer to earth grounding. And we'll be working with the principle of Hod, which is surrender. What does surrender look like? Yes.
Question for you.
Absolutely.
Can you give us any structure or rules or boundaries about a daily writing practice?
Yes, which is the thing I knew. I was like, we're not going to be able to cover anything. Yeah, so I wrote a little about Haruki Murakami's kind of writing routine. He has an extreme writing routine. Real quick, does anyone here have a writing practice, a routine that they want to share into the space? Yeah, Mark.
In the Twin Cities, there's a place called The Loft. A lot of you from there should know about this. And it's a writer's consortium, I guess we call it, that owns a building. And in the building is, I forget the name of the press, but it's one of the Indianapolis press. And they have a area with little rooms about 4 or 8 mm-hmm. feet. And a window and a desk and plugs. So I spent the whole winter going there every day on the bus in the cold. And part of it was a 4-block walk in below zero weather. It really solidified my wanting to stay there for 4 hours. So I went there, and from November until February, I wrote a novel.
Beautiful.
That's awesome.
Beautiful.
I'm not doing that.
That's a beautiful. So the first thing, and I put this on the board called The Artist's Way, which I know many people in here might know. The first thing is I have this little quote about Romeo and Juliet we read a few days ago, of Juliet, this idea of like the muse or inspiration or something. If Romeo's at the fence every day, right, waiting, sometimes Juliet will come. And so there's a way in which something I do in my practice is I do morning pages when I can, not always in the morning, but it's basically 3 pages of a notebook, nonstop writing without editing or without crossing anything out. And you just keep your hand moving. And it's the simplest thing. It's like so it just becomes like meditation, like a practice. And sometimes what arises is you don't even know what you're thinking about. And I'm happy to keep talking. I want to respect everyone's time. We're at time if anyone needs to run. But I think routine, it's something writers, we're always thinking about. And it shifts in our life, right? Like sometimes our lives or the seasons change drastically and our practices might need to change, right? Maybe we're in intense writing mode and you have more time. But I think the easiest thing is that 3 pages every day, just letting your hand run free, is something probably pretty easy to like slip in there for 20 minutes. Yeah. Any other questions? Y'all call me? Wonderful. Thank you all so much for coming.
Thanks, Rachel. Thank you. Thank you.